It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. By the time most of us reach our late 30s, we're lucky if we have enough motivation to jog around the block, let alone maintain the kind of shape it takes to play quarterback in the National Football League. And yet my next guest has done just that. At the age of 38, Steelers quarterback Charlie Batch has just completed his 15th season in the NFL, a season that saw him enjoy one of the highlights of his career when he led Pittsburgh to a victory over the eventual Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens in Week 13 to keep the Steelers' playoff hopes alive. But for all he has done on the field, Charlie Batch is being recognized for what he has done off of it. This year, Mr. Batch was named the winner of the Byron Wizzer White Award, an honor given by the NFL Players Association to a player for their work in the community. 12 years ago, he started his Best of the Batch Foundation, fulfilling a promise he made after his younger sister, Danielle Settles, was shot and killed in 1996. Charlie Batch, it's an honor to have you here. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
If you have a comment or question for Charlie Batch, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. First of all, Charlie, congratulations on winning the Byron Wizzer White Award. What does winning an award like that, like this one, mean to you?
It was truly special. I mean, it was humbling because I had no idea. When I looked at the names that were attached to this award, first and foremost, and then the names that I was going up against, I'm saying there's no way, you know, that I would even do this. And all of a sudden, they had the press conference, and they had everybody there, and next thing you know, they call me up there, and I'm just shocked. I'm just like, are you serious? Like, wow, because not only, you know, you get honored by your peers and you're going up against 1,500 players, you know, sometimes in some cases maybe 1,900 players when you include some of the practice squad players, but to now get it narrowed down and be honored for your work, it was truly a blessing because I don't do this by myself. And it really was a collective effort. And when you talk about all the volunteers who help out with the foundation, without them, there would be no me. And this is why it makes it so special, because it really is collectively, it's a group effort.
The award is $100,000. So what will that money be used for?
Well, right now we're in the process of trying to build an educational, state-of-the-art educational facility. And we're, you know, have putting all the legwork that goes along with it right now. And obviously our board of directors will have to approve any moves that we want to do. And it's just exciting because right now, you know we have the vision as far as what we want to do, because there are no Boys and Girls Clubs. There are no Salvation Armies. There's nothing. Salvation Army, though, but there are no Boys and Girls Clubs over there that, you know, allows kids to have an opportunity for after school work that they may do. So we are the closest thing to that over there. So we're just trying to really expand on what we're currently doing, and we're just excited about what's in front of us right now.
A lot of athletes and celebrities have their names on foundations, and we're on radio, so people can't see me making the quotes with my fingers. They have these foundations, but you have done so much more than simply lend your name to the cause, to the point where between a Steelers practice and doing work for the Best of the Batch Foundation, you sometimes don't get home until 11 o'clock at night. Why is it so important for you to be so hands-on with this?
Well, for me, first and foremost, I don't lend my name to something and not be there. So people who know that I'm involved and my name is attached to it, they know I'm going to be there, because I wouldn't ask a volunteer to do something that I wouldn't do. And if I feel like, you want to know what, if time is all that most people have, and we all have at the end of the day, if I'm asking them to be there, I'm going to be there. If I'm picking up trash at the playground, if the volunteers are doing it, I'm going to do that. So it's just something that, for me, when you look at it, at the end of the day, for me, it's all about the smiles on the kids' faces. And no matter how tired you are, when you see those smiles, you're like, you want to know what? This is what it's all about.
What can you tell us about some of the other work that goes into the Best of the Batch?
Well, what we are an educational foundation. And what we do is use sports to draw the kids in. So what we do, we continuously help uplift community kids through sports and education. Use sports to draw the kids in, and at that point, we're able to implement any educational aspect that we choose. And we are a year-round Foundation. We've helped over 1,000 kids throughout a calendar year. We've helped raise over $1.2 million and keeping that focus on the educational component, because what we try to do is create more opportunities than what they currently have. A lot of people see me as, okay, you're a professional athlete, but they don't necessarily know what it took for me to get here. You need, first and foremost, you need education. You need to graduate from high school. You need to get at least 3 years of college. Maybe, you know, in some cases, you have to graduate college, because if the coaches don't necessarily trust you and don't feel like you did what you needed to do in a classroom, you'll never have an opportunity on a sports field. So what they see is the end result right now for me. So what I always do is make sure you're stressing the importance of education. Every program that we have in our foundation requires you to at least have a 2.2 in order for you to participate. And if you don't, we work with parents, we work with the principal, we work with the school administrators to make sure that we're trying to do everything in our power to help keep their grades up.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. Our guest is Steelers quarterback Charlie Batch. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002 is the number to call. As I mentioned in the introduction, your foundation was established in honor of your younger sister, Danielle Settles, who was shot and killed in 1996, caught in the crossfire between rival gangs in Homestead. She was only a month past her 17th birthday, and you were playing college football in Eastern Michigan. You were a junior at the time. You received a phone call from your mother, and there you are pursuing your dream when your life is turned upside down. What was that like for you, and what were you feeling?
Oh, it was very difficult, because I remember it was a Sunday night, and I remember just being at home. My roommate answered the telephone, and you know, if anybody knows my family, they know we're very close, and they know my mom, and my roommate picked up the phone, and he says, "Hey, Charlie, your mom's on the phone." So I pick up the phone. I'm like, "Hey, Mom, how you doing?" And on the other end, it was dead silence. And I just remember like it was yesterday. And she's like, "Hey, you need to come home." And I said, "Well, what do I need to come home?" "Well, let me take you back to 1996. You didn't have cell phones like you do today. You had a beeper, and you had to stop at a payphone or somebody's house to figure out who was calling you." And I'm like, "Mom, before I get on this road, you need to tell me why I'm coming home." And she said with the deepest wallow, your sister's been shot and killed." So at that point, I'm packing and I need to get on the road. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm flying down the road trying to get home. It was a 5-hour drive, was almost like a 3.5-hour drive, you know, and I'm down the road and I finally get there. And when you hear the story on how everything happened, and it was just crazy, because she was walking down the street from her friend's house, got caught in a crossfire between rival gangs, and she was shot in the side of the head instantly and killed instantly. And Danielle was 17 years old, but the guy that she was with walking down the street actually used her as a body shield. And at that point, I'm like, wow. You know, and it was very difficult, because as I'm preparing for the funeral, or our family's preparing for the funeral, you never know how everything is going to hit. It didn't hit me, because I'm used to coming home from college and not seeing her when I first get home. You know, but always that next morning, I would always see her, because she's up cooking breakfast for everybody. But she wasn't there. So when I finally saw her in the casket, it was like, this is real. This is as real as it can be. But when you're in that situation and you have people who know who did it, and then I'm in a situation where they're like, "Let's go get them." You know, and I like, if I did what I wanted to do, I wouldn't be sitting here in front of you today. And it was one of those things for me. It was an opportunity to, number one, go back to school, graduate, focus, and try to provide for my family the best way possible by, number one, graduating college, but at the same time now preparing to be drafted by one of those 32 teams. And that allowed me to happen. To this day, the killer hasn't been found.
Right.
And it's been very difficult in that situation, but now that I'm drafted, and our trial's coming up now, we're the number one story on the newscast around here. It was Detroit Lions quarterback, sister. And that's how it was always presented. So when I watch the news, and I see the first 10 minutes, it's almost pretty much negative. And I just remember myself being that top story. And I say, you want to know what? If we're able to create something and hopefully now be able to be that buffer for people to, number one, be able to ask and see how we grieved and how we were able to get through that process, we never want another family to feel the way that we did. And we tried to create programs and keep kids off the street and be able to get people engaged. And I think we've been able to do that. And no matter what, to this day, I always get letters in the mail around Christmas time, because there's somebody in there that says, "We have information that can lead to the arrest of your sister's killer." Well, where were you 15 years ago when I needed you the most? Now, all of a sudden, because you think that I can help you, now you want help. And if you want to do it out of the goodness of your heart, if you have that information. And so I don't put my mother through that situation, because it's always around Christmas time, and we put it past us. We moved on. We closed that chapter. And, you know, I still get them to this day. And it's just very difficult whenever you're going through something like that. But all I know is over the last 12 years, we've been able to create the foundation, create these programs, and we have over 1,000 kids that are through the year. And it's just great to really see, because a lot of those kids don't know my story. They never met my sister, but those parents, they know who my sister was. So when those kids have questions about my history, the parents can verify, you want to know what? This is what he went through. It wasn't all gravy as far as what you see now. There is that journey that takes place, and that's called life. And as you're living life, if you haven't felt what I've felt, at some point in your life, you will feel something like that. If all you have to do is keep living.
It's an increasingly violent world out there. And Pittsburgh has seen its share of senseless gun violence recently, especially in the Black community. In what ways do you think that you are helping to protect this generation of kids from the kind of violence that took your sister's life?
Well, I think you're raising awareness. I think creating those opportunities, which we've been able to do, at giving them that safe haven to be able to come to and say, you know, we're having problems, we'll be having somebody to talk to. And it's just something for us, you know, we have a physical building. We have address, email, telephone, so we're not hard to get in contact. My mother's phone number been the same for 20 years, and my grandmother's phone number been the same for 30 years. So it's not hard to get in touch with me like you have, and you've been able to reach out to get me on this show. So I want to be there. I let people know, look, I am here. I give every kid that participates in my program my cell phone number, and I say, call me if you need something. Don't call or play on my phone, or to say you have a Steelers phone number in your phone and start to play. Call me when you're serious. To the kids' credit, I haven't changed my phone number in 11 years. And people look at me and say, you're crazy. It's no, I'm being real, because I want them to know I am here for them.
What's the work that's left to be done? What's still to be accomplished?
Well, I think we need to, obviously, you're always going to have, you need more volunteers. And that's something that we always strive for, because no matter what, and we have over 100 volunteers that help out with our program. And that doesn't mean if there's tutoring, you know, that goes along with our study halls that we have in the summer with our summer reading programs, or is that cooks that we may have on the playground, or if that referees for the basketball league, or you want to know what, as we take a trip to the Hall of Fame every May, like we have for the last 6 years, which is coming up May the 13th. So we take 100 kids up there and they want to ride the bus and they want to be part of it. I mean, these are things that we need, and it's not just one thing, because everybody has different schedules and we understand that, and we're volunteering times. We don't have any paid we don't have any paid staff members with our foundation. So everybody knows that it is volunteers. And you want to know what? We're here to help generate, you know, change a culture, and we're able to do that. For instance, we teamed up with Carnegie Mellon University a couple years ago, teamed up with their School of Architect program. Had no idea what the School of Architect program was about, but there was a guy that was there by the name of David Lewis. He's a trustee. He actually came over to Homestead, wanted to see what our program was about. And he said, you want to know what? I want to introduce architecture to your kids. We're going to create a program, and we're going to take kids from here and bring them down to Carnegie Mellon. I said, okay, fine. We created the program. Actually brought 10 kids from Still Valley area. We brought 10 kids from the Moon Township area. Brought them down there. They merged. First, when you have two communities coming together, they don't know what to get. But by the end of it, they were talking, they were interacting. But come to find out, there were two kids that were gifted in architect that had no idea that they were gifted. What we did on the first exercise when we got down there, the professor actually made us, you know, draw a line, this line, this, but this line connects with this. But at the end of it, he said, now stand up at the window, and what you have on your paper is that building across the street. Well, of course, mine didn't look like that. I'm like, yeah, mine doesn't. But there was a kid that was just like, wow, like my drawing looks like that. And that allowed him to get a summer scholarship to continue his education at one of the world's best universities that was in his backyard, and he had no idea. So it was one of those, that opportunity presented itself because somebody believed in me. And that's what we're trying to do. As we try to create these opportunities, we're trying to push these kids beyond their expectations. And the people who help are able to do this.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. We're talking with Steelers quarterback Charlie Batch. If you'd like to join the conversation, 412 412- 646-2002 is the number to call. We'll get into a little bit of what is in the future for Charlie Batch as a quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers and in the NFL, and take your calls and questions. When we return, it's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and this is 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're continuing our conversation with Steelers quarterback Charlie Batch, who has just completed his 15th season in the National Football League. And even though he's pushing 40, he wants to continue in the National Football League, and we'll talk about where he is with his career. But Charlie, I wanted to pick up the conversation by asking you about growing up in Homestead. What was it like? Describe your life as a kid.
It was fun. My mom did the best you could to provide for us as a single parent, and I love her for that. You know, you don't necessarily know some of those struggles that you're going through because everybody around you are going through the same thing, and you don't realize that until you get older. And once but for me growing up, playing sports was always it, but she made sure that I always stayed focused on education because she saw the talent. And she knew you a little bit better than some of the other kids. And, you know, I'm sure other people were reminding her of that. But she always made sure to say, you want to know what? That's always not guaranteed. But all I ask you to do is graduate high school. And at that point, it's up to you. I would love for you to graduate college and be the first member of our family to graduate college. And I said, you want to know what? That's not an unrealistic goal. You know, let me go out there and seek that. But I knew in order for me to further that education, I had to try to do that through sports. And that's why I focused on the education. And then that allowed me the opportunity to get a scholarship to Eastern Michigan University, and had no idea where Eastern Michigan was at, let alone how to spell Ypsilanti, Michigan. But I really do believe the recruiter was there to see one of our other players on the team. And he saw me throwing the ball around and he was just like, who is that guy? And, you know, that turned into a visit, and, you know, I ended up signing with Eastern Michigan, and it was great to really go up to Michigan and be part of that.
About the time that you were coming up, there weren't many black quarterbacks at the college and professional level, and some sports pundits back in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s were still questioning, hard as it is to believe today, we're still questioning whether African Americans were suited to play quarterback. What was it like for you?
It was, you know, as you're going through it, you're just like, you hear it, but you're just like, oh, I don't necessarily know how this whole thing is going to play out. But for me, I was just trying to get in position to do so. And going to Eastern Michigan, I was the first player drafted out of there in 13 years. So there weren't a lot of college pro scouts coming in and out of Eastern Michigan facilities. So I ended up getting drafted. But at the same time, it was just one of those things to have, you know, all I asked for was that opportunity. And like you said, there weren't a lot of black quarterbacks, but I didn't necessarily look at it as pressure to succeed, to allow the next person. I was just trying to have fun and play ball and not worry about that pressure. But for me, having that early success allowed the opportunities for other African-American quarterbacks to now have that possible opportunity. And you had Dante Culpepper, you had Byron Leftwich, you had a lot of those guys who were now starting to get drafted in the first round. And then it ultimately led to Michael Vick being the number one draft pick. And it was just, you know, with the Atlanta Falcons. So when you see that, now you're just like, you know what? Maybe I was, you know, a part of a trailblazing path to allow, you know, wonder what, giving that opportunity and didn't see it then. But now when you look back to look at it, you're like, wait, maybe you were part of a movement.
And we should mention, too, that you did get your degree in criminal justice,
yes,
I believe.
Yes, did get in criminal justice. And actually, as you know, the NFL provides furthering education classes, and they provide them at different universities. And there's five universities that they have now. I ended up going to four of them, which was Wharton, which is a part of the University of Pennsylvania. I ended up going up to Harvard, and Kellogg, which is at Northwestern University. I just got back from Stanford last week with the business management classes there. And in 2 weeks, I'll be going up to Notre Dame. And that'll be the fifth school that I'll be able to really go out there and now, you know, go through the program, get the certificate, and really learn from some great educators there, because not only are they teaching you, you know, how to transition and what to expect for life after, you know, you meet a lot of great people along the way and you're able to bounce ideas off of.
Do a lot of your contemporaries, did you find that a lot of players who are also in the NFL aren't looking ahead with the kind of foresight that you have that maybe aren't planning for what comes next?
And that you do have that problem, and no matter what level. And I think this is something that for us players have to realize right away that there's only average career is only 3 years. You don't get your pension until year number four. So you don't reap all the rewards that comes along with even being part of the National Football League if you don't get to that fourth season. So the players, they have a tough time because you think I'm going to play 10 years, but at the same time, when you start thinking about life after football, that's where you have some coaches throughout the National Football League that says, you want to know what? He's thinking about something else. Maybe we need to go and find somebody else who is just going to focus on football. That's the problem that players have because, number one, there's not an offseason. That much of an offseason. Think about it. We didn't make the playoffs this year, where most of the time we go into close to February. Offseason starts in April. So you only have 2 months to figure out what that transition is going to be. And if now if I need to come in and say, you want to what, Paul, I want to intern for you. But I only have a couple hours, you know, in between these months. But once we get to April, I can't come here anymore. You know, so it's a tough battle that players have to deal with, but you want to know what? Everybody has problems. Nobody cares about your problems, but you have to focus on making sure that there is a transition for life after and figuring out early, you know, what that transition is going to do or going to become.
Good point and point taken. And if you want to be an intern for Essential Pittsburgh, you're hired. Just so you know. Talking with Steelers quarterback Charlie Batch, I want to go back to how you got started in football in the first place. Here you are, kid bopping around Homestead. When was the first time you picked up a football and put on a uniform?
Actually, for me, I picked up a football at early ages, 3-4 years old. But for me, 5 and 6 is whenever my mom was just kind of like, I don't necessarily know. I want him to play football. Other coaches were trying to get me to play, but I wasn't old enough. So at that point, I remember I was 6 years old, and I was throwing the ball around. And I said, Mom, I want to play football. And she's like, no, you're not old enough. That was her reason. You're not old enough. So she thought I was just literally going to, you know, forget about the whole registration process. So here I was 7 years old and I brought the registration form home and she's like, oh, I thought you forgot. So she was hoping that, you want to know what? I go out there, I get hit, I get knocked around and I just don't want to play football anymore. And actually it was reversed because when I got hit, I'm like, I like this contact sport. And it allowed me to really go out there and play, even though now I started to transition away from quarterback. But when you're at a younger age, you play many positions because you don't know what you're going to play. So I play, you know, running back, quarterback, you know, you're playing safety on the defensive side. So it's just one of those things for me. I didn't know how it was going to play out. But when I got to that point at 7 years old, it allowed me really to go out there and really be around my friends because that's all they were doing. And if I didn't play football at that early age, that means I would be sitting up there watching them play football. So I didn't want that. I figured I'd just be part of the process.
What advice do you have for parents today who are, you know, whose kids watch football and love it and want to get out there and play, but whose parents are concerned about some of the residual effects of the concussions, mm-hmm. the contact, and the things that we are still just really learning about with former players who are really suffering?
Right, and you look at that. I mean, that's the end result, and you're right. Everybody's going to have issues that you're going to deal with, but I wasn't as big as what I am now. I was that skinny player at the age of 7 playing football, so my mother wasn't concerned, or nor did you have the, you know, education that you have now. What I say to parents that are out there, let your child make that decision. If they want to go out there and play, let them play, but don't make that decision for them because you never know whether they like it or not. So you create more opportunities for them, allow them to do it. Now, when you look at the concussion aspect, that means if you're worried about concussions, you might as well worry about the concussions if you're riding a skateboard. That means if you're worried about getting hit in the head with a baseball, you know, accidentally when you're playing baseball, he can fall skiing. I mean, there's multiple different ways that you can get a concussion nowadays. And even though the technology is starting to catch up, as long as that transition happens as it relates to equipment getting better, making the game safer, then that allows you to allow your kid to play many sports as possible.
You mentioned that the average career for an NFL quarterback is 3, or for an NFL player is 3 years, and you've managed to stick around for 5 times that. You're 15-year veteran. So are you coming back for another season?
Well, that's my plan. I mean, right now the ball's not in my court. I don't know what they're going to do when it comes to that, but I made and I expressed to them and let them know, hey, I do want to come back. So I don't know how the whole draft is going to play out. I don't know what this youth movement is going to involve. But at the end of the day, the ball's ultimately up in their court. I'm ready to come back whenever they say so.
Now, you will turn, during the season next year, you'll turn 39.
Right.
What makes you want to come back and still do this?
Because I know I can. You know, one thing about it, as you get older, your body tells you, you know, they're going to let you know one way or another where you stand. You know, there's times, of course, in the summertime, I'm fine. But when you get in those winter months and you know it's cold outside, oh, yeah, them bones, you know, it takes a while to get warmed up and get going. But as I went through this season, there was never a point that said, you want to know what? I need this up. And playing the two games that I did, I took some shots. I got hit. I wasn't hurt in the morning. I didn't feel as stiff in the morning like I was when I was younger. And I'm like, okay, this doesn't feel bad. So it didn't stop me from missing a practice. It didn't stop me from missing a game. I was out there and I participated in 100% of what I needed to participate in. So that's not necessarily an issue for me. So as long as I can do this, as long as I know my body is capable of going through the regimen that you need to go through from this point in April all the way through that point of next February, I mean, I know I can do it.
How much did it mean? How sweet was it to beat the Baltimore Ravens in a big game in Baltimore last season with so much on the line for the Steelers? And for you personally, coming off what was a very tough loss in Cleveland, people were questioning your ability to play. And a lot of folks were saying, this guy cannot play anymore. But you went out and proved otherwise. What was that like?
Well, first and foremost, I don't doubt the doubters. After watching that game, I led the team to an 8-turnover performance. I turned the ball over 3 times myself. So, yeah, everybody had their right to doubt.
You had doubts?
No, I didn't have doubts.
You did not?
No, I did not, because it was one of those things that all I can ask for is another opportunity to show what was shown out there on the field to be wrong. And that situation happened because Ben wasn't ready to play. Byron got hurt, so he wasn't there. So I'm like, you want to know if I'm going to go out? Let me get one more shot. And when you put the stack and what I was stacked against, you're talking about going on the road, you know, with a revamped line. You're talking about, you know, not being 100% healthy from a team standpoint, and then going on the road to Baltimore. Nobody gave us a chance outside of our locker room. But when you go out there and now methodically, you know, put the points on the board, defensively they're playing great, offensively we're moving the ball, special team putting together. When you play a total team performance like we did and you have a chance to win the game at the end, I don't think nobody would envision us to go 13 plays, 61 yards, in 6 minutes and 51 seconds to win the game with no time on the clock. Nobody would have gave you a shot. Nobody would have told you that. But when a story played out and you're sitting back and all of a sudden you do something like that, it makes it special.
You were a starter with the Detroit Lions, but you've been a backup here in Pittsburgh with the Steelers for most of your career, albeit with a great organization in your hometown, but as a second or sometimes third stringer. Would you have preferred to be a starter in another city, or has this been a blessing in disguise?
Actually, it's a combination because, yes, I would love to be a starter in another city, but those opportunities never presented itself when I was a free agent. So whenever I was a free agent, the Steelers presented themselves, say, hey, we have a 2-year deal, and under those terms, I either had to accept it or not accept it. So I've always accepted what the terms were, and we talked about it, and I knew where they stood, whether it was a 2-year deal. The longest I had here was a 3-year deal, and short was a 1-year deal. So either way, it was always under those terms, but at the end of the day, it turns out to be a blessing in disguise because there's no way that I could have told you in 2002 that 1 year was going to turn into 11, and in the process go to 3 Super Bowls and win 2 of them? Absolutely not. There was no way that I can tell you how this story was going to end, but it was just truly a blessing because no matter what I've done on the field, it's always what I've done off the field that I appreciate it more because the impact that we have on the kids and we're able to do this throughout a calendar year, that's what it's about. Because let's face it, Paul, this game will be taken away from me at some point. It will be taken away from everybody at some point. But at the end of the day, what impact are you able to make? And I know I've been able to do that with the foundation. I know our volunteers believe in what we're doing. And the fundraisers that we have in Pittsburgh, the city believes in what we're doing because with our annual fundraiser in the pocket, we raise over $100,000. And that comes because people in the city of Pittsburgh believe in our cause. They believe that they know that we are focusing on education and they want to be part of it. They could care less about me being a Steeler because that's not what it impacts at the end of the day. What it impacts is these kids through the city and how we can make these kids stronger and grow. That's what it's about. And anybody who wants to know more about what we're doing, they can follow they can follow the foundation at batchfoundation.org. We just relaunched the website in January, which is phenomenal because it became more kid-friendly, and it allowed people a chance to now see pictures and see everything that we're doing now, because we had 10 years of content that we had to revamp, and we were able to get it together. We teamed up with Flying Cork Media, and Jude Michaels down there said, I don't like that website. We're going to create something new for you. And Amy, Katie, I mean, those people down there at Flying Cork Media, thank you for everything that you've done, because now they gave people visuals as far as everything that we talk about to allow people to now see what the impact that we have throughout the city.
Our guest is Charlie Batch. We're coming pretty close to the end of the program, but one last thing I wanted to ask you about. You, when you talk about the work that you do off the field, in addition to what you do with your foundation, you also worked last year to bring students together from Manesson and Brentwood, where there had been some racial tensions during a basketball game last year. That's a tough situation. Why did you choose to step into it?
It was one of those things I read the article that was in the paper, and I posted something on Facebook. And I do all my social media myself, so it's all me. So I posted it, and you had some people that didn't necessarily agree with what I said. But, when it came down to it, Tim O'Malley actually contacted me. He's the executive director for the WPIL. He said, hey, I need help. I need you to help create a program and bring these two schools together and fix the problem. What solution can you come up with? I came up with a program, brought these two schools together. We worked together for 3 months. And we actually now brought them to an assembly, and we teamed up with UPMC with their Dignity and Respect campaign. And I'm the national spokesperson for the Dignity and Respect campaign, and we brought them together. And basically at the end of the day, you basically are saying, hey, I want to treat everybody with dignity and respect. They were able to bring together, wash away their differences, and it worked. And we had assembly at Brentwood. We had assembly at Manesson, and both schools were part of it, and it was just something that was phenomenal, and it really carried on through the entire process.
Boy, folks have to wonder where you find the energy to do all the things you do and be a professional athlete. But it's amazing, again, what you've accomplished both on and off the field. And my guest has been Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Charlie Batch. He, again, is the winner of this year's Byron Wizzer White Award. Charlie, it's been a pleasure visiting with you. And again, if people want more information about the work that you're doing, want to get involved, it's batchfoundation.org.
Yes, batchfoundation.org with the foundation. But if you want to know what I'm doing outside of football as well, speaking, ebooks, different things of that nature, you can go to charliebatch.com, and that'll give you an idea of what we do through a calendar year as well.
And we'll put a link to that on our website at wesa.fm. Charlie Batch, Steelers quarterback, thank you so much for being our guest here on this edition of Essential Pittsburgh. It's been a pleasure.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And that'll do it for today. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening.